we wouldn't be who we are if it weren't, you know, for all of the great things that we've done and all the mistakes that we've made, all the pain we've been through. You know, it all adds to the experience.
Hello, and welcome to the 40 Drinks Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie McLaughlin. You know, sometime in the years around our 40th birthday, many of us start to feel what I've started calling the ick, like some part of your life no longer fits and you don't know what to do about it. I know that was true for me, and I fought against it, which only made it a messier process. But having 40 drinks with 40 people over the course of a year helped me escape the influence of that ick. On this podcast, I welcome you to tap into my stories and experience, as well as those of my guests, to help you emerge from your own ick and maybe even avoid some of the mistakes we made along the way. My mission is to make it common cultural knowledge that there is a transition most of us face around age 40, and then showcase so many versions of that transition that every single person approaching or recently turned 40 with dread in their heart knows that they are not alone. Today, my guest is John Lawyer, who spent 16 years as a warrior in Kuwait, Baghdad, and Kandahar before coming home at age 34, at which point he had to figure out who he was. The transition from warrior to civilian was a challenging one, but he woke up one night when he was 40 to a moment of clarity, which led him to a spiritual path and uncovered his purpose in this next phase of life. Hi, John. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you for having me.
It is my sincere pleasure. I'm looking forward to jumping into your story and learning more about your midlife transition. And you're not far past it now, am I correct? You're only, you're just a pup. Oh, yeah. You're in your young 40s.
Yeah, I'm 42 now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the story is fresh.
That's right.
Why don't we start by set the stage? What brought you to the beginning of your transition? Who were you? What experiences molded you into that person?
Sure. That's a big question.
It is.
I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma, and mm-hmm. I knew college wasn't for me, so I decided to join the U.S. Army straight out of high school. That was about a year before 9/11, so this is kind of way back when. And did my mm-hmm. training, got to my first permanent duty station about 6 months before 9/11, and then you know, war happened, and I would end up spending the next 12 years out of the first 15 years of my young adult life in combat zones in Kuwait, Baghdad, Iraq, and then I spent about 6.5 years consecutively in Kandahar, Afghanistan. And
wow,
I was a counterintelligence special agent in the Army, and then I got out and I was doing the same thing as a civilian. And interestingly, my wife was with me during this whole process. She did the same job I did. So we kind of took that journey together, and mm-hmm. you know, I really loved my job. I was good at it. I felt important, and I felt like I was doing big things, and I have questions about a lot of that now, but.
I bet. Yeah. For a civilian who's watched, you know, every season of Homeland, tell me what counterintelligence means to a layperson, and it's not on TV.
I think Homeland does a pretty good job of just showing kind of what some of that does. I mean, you know, I've watched it, and I thought through some of it, you know, I mean, obviously it's sensationalized, but a lot of it was pretty accurate. I mean, it's, you know, counterintelligence is pretty wide range. It ranges from, we're trying to stop people from spying on us. If people are spying us, we try to find them, and we try to either neutralize them or provide them disinformation. As counterintelligence, we also collect intelligence. Like we meet human sources and gather information, and we do counterterrorism and stuff like that as well. So it was a pretty, for me, I did stuff all the way from like big stuff, like spy versus spy, like with Iran or Russia, that kind of stuff, all the way down to like trying to get people to give us information on the battlefield that are giving us like really like low level tactical information. I did kind of the whole range of stuff.
Wow. And again, as someone who has never been in a military environment, that's some pretty intense experiences, spending 12 years in the middle of war zones.
Yeah. And for me, I on like, especially on the counterterrorism part, it almost takes an extremist to catch an extremist. So like, you're kind of like wholly dedicated to this thing. You're like, you're completely enmeshed in it. And I think the longer I was in it, the more the toll of it kind of occurred to me. I got older. As you grow, you start to recognize things that you don't see when you're young. I lost that idealistic part of myself, and I saw the human toll of fighting this quote unquote enemy that oftentimes they weren't really bad people. They were just like we were, doing the same thing, putting food on a table, take care of their family, their home, their country. And I think that starts to add up over time, you know?
Yeah. Cognitive dissonance, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I don't get into politics very much at all or anything, but I think war is a political tool, you know? So it doesn't matter why you went to war after the first 30 days. It's really not about probably why you went to war in the first place anyway. So you see this, you're part of this machine that just kind of eats the other side up. And then you also see it eating yourself up. You see it eating your brothers and sisters in arms up, and the waste of it. You see the waste of like even the money spent on it. I mean, I saw billions of dollars spent. That was just really kind of wild. So you start to see all that.
Yeah. The last time we spoke, you said that when you were in Kandahar, you realized one day that you were the old guy in the room. You were the experienced one. You were the veteran soldier.
I'd always been the baby in the room. And then, I mean, it happened almost overnight, right? I turn around and like, I was having problems. There was all this drama happening in my unit. And I was like, why is all this drama happening? And I realized, I'm like, I'm older than all these kids. And I'm like, that's why it feels like high school, because I'm old. They're just kids. They haven't been doing this, like, you know. So yeah, it was a sobering moment for me.
So you came home in your mid-30s, is that right? You came home from active duty?
Right. Yeah. And well, at that point, I had been a civilian for a while, but yeah, I was
okay. All right, you had been
actively in combat zone still. Yeah, doing the same thing.
So you were doing the same thing, but from a civilian standpoint.
Correct.
Not a member of the military. Am I understanding that right? All right. And then you come home, and life here in the United States is, I'm guessing, very, very different than where you had been living for a dozen years.
Yeah.
How was that transition?
That was hard. I mean, I came home.
I can't even imagine.
I didn't have an identity. I didn't know who I was, because I was this person that, like, you know, when I walked into a room, people listened to what I had to say, and, you know, I would tell whole stacks of airplanes where to go and troops where to go. And I thought I was important. And then you do this thing, you know, I come home and the world is kind of moving in slow motion. It's not bright. I lived on an airfield where, you know, it was busy. There's 50,000 people. Jets are taking off all the time. Helicopters, you know, it's just, you miss all that. It's like adrenaline junkies or performance athletes or extreme sports guys. Like, you know, you have that high, and soldiers are no difference. And so, yeah, I had PTSD, you know, OCD, anxiety, depression, whatever you want to call all of it. And so, yeah, I was a very broken human being when I came home.
How did you start to push yourself back together?
I think that the thing that helped me is I was always a positive person. Even when I was in this dark, dark place, I was still positive. So that helped me not get lost. I didn't lose myself completely. And I was also always a kind person. So I think I was kind with myself, and I was able to tell myself, and this is tough, and, you know, I don't know how you're going to get out of it, but you will. Mm-hmm. And I think that was helpful. I think time is this beautiful thing. It does heal you. And I realized that I had wisdom, because I'd gained all this knowledge. And I think knowledge through experience becomes wisdom. And so I did have some wisdom, and I would value that. And I went to VA. They matched me with a therapist who practiced Eastern medicine. She taught me mindfulness. Wasn't able to completely wrap my being around that at the time, but it did help. I think that helped start things going. I think that we're always on a journey, whether we know it or not. I didn't know I was on a journey at the time, you know, but I was.
Yeah. Well, it's the game we play as little kids, right? I remember they had it at my grandmother's house when I was a little kid. Life, the game of life. And it's a journey, no matter, you know, you're going from, you know, you're in elementary school and you're going from grade to grade and you're learning different things. And then, you know, you graduate high school and then there's a choose your own adventure. Are you going to college? Are you going to the military? Are you going to trade school? Are you going to work? Are you, you know, what are you doing? But you're right. When we're young, we don't think of it as a journey. I think it's not until we're somewhere, you know, in the middle of it that we realize that, you know, the journey brought us to where we are. And then, you know, everything we do moving forward is continuing the journey.
Yeah. It's like when we're young, we're trying to get to a destination.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. And for a lot of people I've talked to, it's like, you're trying to check all the boxes. You're trying to achieve the things, right? In whatever path you've chosen, career, relationship, home. Yeah. Yeah. So you start seeing this person who's practicing Eastern traditions, which are unfamiliar to you and interesting, but not fully intriguing, maybe, but you can't quite get all the way there, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then what?
Yeah, I kept going and things got better for me. You know, like I said, time helped and I started to have more perspective on things. And I also got to a point, this is kind of before I had my kind of spiritual moment, but I started to realize that I needed to kind of stop caring about as much, not like giving up sort of way, but like I needed to stop kind of being attached to outcomes and worrying about things that I couldn't control. So that was a big moment for me. And I never realized it. I actually didn't even realize that part of my journey until very recently, even just it took me some introspection looking back. So that helped. And then about, you know, a little over 2 years ago, I was laying in bed with my wife. She was asleep. And I had this like a profound moment of understanding or clarity. Some call it awakening. It has many names, but it was this very warm feeling of being connected to everything in the universe, that we're kind of all the same. We are one. And also that we're all saying very similar things when we talk about what we believe and what we practice or what our faith or anything is. Why do we divide ourselves? I had all these thoughts all kind of at once. That was kind of when I finally was like, oh, I'm a spiritualist. I'm on a spiritual path. And, you know, this is what I want to do.
How much of the spiritual mumbo jumbo had you been exposed to or exploring or, you know, aware of before that night when you were visited?
Yeah. Very little. Okay. I couldn't have told you what the ego was from like a spiritual perspective, like the mind and ego. Like I couldn't have had a conversation. And that part of what happened is I was like, oh man, I got to go figure out how to talk to people about this. I got to go read. I read 60 books in like 4 months. And I looked online and just like became familiar with how to talk to people. And I wanted to be able to talk to people regardless of whether they were a Hindu or an atheist or a Christian or a Muslim. It didn't matter, right? Or a pagan. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to talk to them all because I felt like I felt like we were all saying the same thing. So I had this like thirst for knowledge and desire to be able to share that my journey with people and have them share theirs with me so that we could be open and better understand one another, because I feel like that would help me in my development. Maybe I could help others in their development and maybe that would be this good thing.
Interesting. So how was it when you had this opening, this awakening? You woke up in the middle of the night, you're home, your wife is next to you. How was it you believed it? How was it that you understood it? If you weren't really aware of much of the spiritual world previous to this, how did you know that this wasn't just indigestion?
Right. I think that's a hard question to answer. I think I've always had a creative side, but I've also approached life logically and tried to combine those two things. It helped me in the military. And when it happened, it all felt very logical. There was obviously this like esoteric creative side to it all, obviously, because it was this big thing, but it just really made sense. It felt, it's kind of ineffable almost, but it was this understanding too, that because what made sense to me is I could stop arguing with strangers on the internet. I could stop arguing with family at Thanksgiving. if I took care of myself, if I love myself, especially first, then I can lift up myself, which would lift up the world around me. Mm-hmm. I should love my neighbor. Like if my neighbor has 90% of the stuff that I have in common, like we agree on 90%, why are we going to argue over 10%? So it was just that it all just made sense to me. It was like a bolt of lightning.
It was logical. It made sense. I'm just trying to process that. When I was talking to Vince, he was also talking about his spiritual awakening. And I was mentioning that, you know, others of the people that I've talked to, that's part of this transition for a good number of people, not everyone, but for a good number of people, there is a spiritual awakening. There is an opening of the heart or the soul. There is an exploration into things that they might have considered weird or out there previously. And so, you know, for a lot of people that I've talked to who have had this experience, they deny it for some amount of time, right? Maybe the first knock or the second knock or the third right. knock. Certainly that is my experience as well of denying it before accepting it. So it's interesting to me that on this very first calling, this very first tapping on the shoulder that you just said, wow, that makes sense.
That's actually interesting. And I've had some similar experience talking to other people. I've had some of those same experiences you described, talking to other people about mm-hmm. their journey as well. I think for me, like I had been stuck for so long in a place, you know, after those first 15 years, you know, where I'd been on and off in the desert for so long. And then coming back, that was 7 years that I was home where I was just kind of stuck. So I think that I was ready for something, maybe anything possibly, but I think
that makes sense.
That's probably was a part of it. And yeah. I think that helped.
That actually, you just illuminated a huge piece of it for me, which we skipped over. Tell me about being stuck. What did being stuck feel like? What did it look like from a practical standpoint?
My wife and I had very similar experiences. So she had experienced a lot of the same darkness and trauma that I had. So we understood each other, but people mm-hmm. didn't really understand us. So like we didn't go out very often. We didn't leave the house that often. We were kind of in our own complete little universe or world. Mm. I don't believe any trauma is better or worse than other trauma, you know, but we had experienced mm-hmm. trauma for so long. Like it was like mm-hmm. years at a time, and it was high grade trauma from like big events, missile attacks or truck bombs or whatever, like, you know, and then there was all that low grade trauma that happens over 12 years. So feeling stuck was just not knowing where to go, not knowing how to move off of high center. So much processing that had to happen. When I had this moment understanding, part of this idea that I had was that, can I help people make it through that process faster than I did? Can someone help? If someone, you know, so that's part of it too, you know, was a desire to help people find their whole, help themselves find their whole, because I think we're whole inside, whether we know it or not. We just have to see it. You know, so
interesting. I relate to that so strongly. It is truly the impetus for the podcast, because I made such a mess of so many transitions in my life. You know, there was collateral damage along the way, from, you know, friends to my own health to relationships sure. to, you know, so if I can, you know, showcase so many different stories, so many different versions of this midlife transition, this midlife discomfort, like the way you describe it as a stuckness, right? And how do we get out of that? Then, you know, hopefully others will make it through with a little bit more grace and ease than I did.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's a great message too.
Yeah. So after your opening, after your midnight visitation, and you then spent months reading and learning, where did you go from there? What did you do with this information?
I knew that I wanted to do something, some type of community. And so I, very early on, I knew I wanted to start a nonprofit spiritual community that was a universal, come one, come all, come as you are. Doesn't matter what you believe, we could all kind of hang out together and talk, mm-hmm. ask great questions, find better answers, and have a place where, even in this digital world that we live in, this busy technical world, we can still have meaningful, authentic human connection online and have smaller communities that aren't Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or whatever, you know, where people can actually have conversations, share stories, share journeys, see what works. Mm-hmm. Because my path isn't going to be your path. It's going to look right. a lot different, but our paths right. may inform each other. And so I really wanted to make a place where that could happen in a kind of natural setting that made sense in mm-hmm. a online world. So I worked every day for over 2 years to make that happen with my wife, who had a very similar experience. And then a good friend of ours she grew up in the Balkans at war herself, and then was in Afghanistan with us for years as well. So we kind of co-founded this thing, this community.
Hi, we'll get back to the conversation in just a minute. If you're in the midst of a midlife transition yourself, I want you to know that my whole reason for doing this podcast is to make sure you know you're not alone. John's story contains some common elements, but everyone's story is unique. However, after publishing 80-something episodes now, I've seen a lot of flavors of midlife transition, which got me thinking. If you've got an issue you're facing or something you're going through, I can probably recommend an episode or two that might be relevant for what you're going through. Hearing how someone else faced something like what you're experiencing might help you see paths you hadn't noticed or give you ideas on how to make your way through this transformation. I've heard a whole lot so far, so go ahead and try and stump me. Think of it as a personal podcast prescription. I'd love to make one for you. So either DM me on social or email me at stephanie@40drinks.com. And don't forget to spell out the word 40. It's interesting that you just mentioned your wife, because I was actually just going to ask you about your wife. You said that you had so many of the same experiences that you were able to really understand each other. Before I ask that, a lot of times during this period of transition, I have heard of, you know, marriages falling apart and of people moving in different directions. How was your wife's transition back to civilian life, and how did you guys stay kind of in alignment and in relation to each other?
That's a really good question. It was not easy. You know, I think being married to Stacy is easy. I think relationships aren't easy. You know, I think right. that there was a lot of anger, not at each other, but we took it out on each other. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of rage inside of me. And we don't talk about that in society. We don't talk about mental health as much. And we kind of talk about it now a lot more than we used to, but it's still very surface level. We don't really talk that there's emotions that are, you know, trapped. And I think that makes relationships difficult. And the good thing is that we both understood our experience because we both went through it. The bad thing is mm-hmm. we weren't great at coping with that because we'd both gone through it. So it was kind of a double-edged sword. And I think that takes me back to the fact that thank God I picked Stacy and she picked me way back when, early on.
Right.
That made that transition easier. This takes us back to every decision we make, especially these big decisions of life, are greatly going to impact this transition that we have into our mm-hmm. mid-years, which are really good years, really great years, because you're not young. You know, you're starting to get wisdom. And so all these choices that we've made really impact this transition. So thankfully,
right,
I have made a good choice and she had made a good choice. That made that part easier, I think, mm-hmm. than it could have been.
Yeah. Did you guys, you met overseas, is that right? While you were already in the military?
We were in the same unit in Georgia in Fort Gordon. And so we deployed together. So we were overseas. Yeah, we actually got married in Kuwait. Our wedding certificate's in Arabic.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. Right. Because a lot of people who get married young get married because they think they should. They get married because it's a box to check. It's, you know, well, you know, we dated all through college and it's been, you know, we've been graduated for 2 years, so we probably should get engaged. And then, you know, another year or two, and it's like, well, we should get married. And then we should have a kid. Well, we should buy the house before the baby comes. And then you find that, you know, you wake up in your mid-30s on the sideline of a soccer field somewhere and you're like, whoa, who am I? And whose life is this? This isn't what I meant to do. But it sounds like for you guys, it wasn't that. It wasn't a should. It was a different choice.
Yeah, I mean, we were very soulmates or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, we were very aligned with each other. And it worked out. She's 8 years older than me. And so I think I was 22, 23 when we got married. I was a kid. But I lived by myself for a couple of years in high school. And I was kind of an older soul a bit. So I think that helped bridge that 8 year gap. But I mean, I love your description of sometimes, and I've been guilty of this too, going through life without doing the things we should do and doing the things society or this tribe or that tribe or this parent or that teacher or this coworker or this boss told us we had to do or should do, right? Mm-hmm. All this stuff. Who are we, right? Who am I? Yeah. And that's a very spiritual question. Who am I?
Right.
That you asked, I spent a lot of time asking that question.
Yeah. What kind of answers have you come up with?
I'm not my name. I'm not my profession, or I'm not my history or my future. I am this kind of universal being that's connected to everyone. And if I am that and you are that, we are that, and we're all the same thing. So that's kind of what I've come up with.
How does that present itself in a practical way on a day-to-day basis?
That's a great question. That's a great follow-up. I love it. I think anybody that's on a spiritual path and realizes it, or a journey and realizes it, we still occupy this three-dimensional reality, this real world we all share every day. Most of us aren't going to go live in a monastery in the foothills of the Himalayas. We're going to live this life that we live with all these other people. So I'm very interested in that intersection between spirituality and our spiritual self, our divine inner self, and the real world, that quote-unquote real world.
Right.
Because we have to occupy it. We're not going to just float away into the ether. So I think you have to be grounded and centered in the day-to-day. Sleep right, eat right, have good relationships, take care of your finances. All these things, I call them life blocks or blocks of life. All these life blocks that you have to take care of. And then you have more time and space to be the spiritual self, to explore that universal divine, capital S self or divine or Jesus Christ or the Brahman or the Tao. It doesn't matter what you call it, right? Like, then we have time for that.
So you're saying take care of the foundations, take care of the build a strong foundation, and that will allow you the space to explore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. And as we come to this midlife place, I also think I'm only going to speak from my own experience. It's been easier to focus on foundation as my world has gotten smaller. And it's not necessarily a bad thing that my world has gotten smaller. All through my 20s and 30s, I was a wild girl. I was a party girl. But I was also, professional, and I had things that I needed to get done. And I was a member of boards and committees, and I would be at, business events, three nights a week, but then, out for a glass of wine with friends afterwards. And so it was always go, 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 go. And on the weekends I would, be up to Maine with friends, and, or we'd be up in the mountains of New Hampshire, or, it was always doing something. There was no quiet. There was no, pause. And I think, I've said since I met my husband, when I turned 40, life has changed. Life has shifted. And it did become smaller because I wanted to concentrate on us and our relationship and building our life together. So some of the other stuff kind of went away. And I do feel like the last 10 years or so that I have really focused on foundation. So it's an interesting idea that you bring to the table here. Cause I had never, I've known sort of like the bigger to the smaller, the louder to the quieter, but I hadn't put that piece together. The foundation, actually, once that's really solid, gives you the bandwidth really for some of the more exploratory pieces, introspection.
Yeah, go be who you need or want to be.
It's interesting you say that way, because I feel like I was who I wanted to be through my 20s and 30s. And certainly from this vantage point, I often wonder what would have happened if I had made different decisions, if I had, you know, settled down earlier, if I had, you know, not been distracting myself with, you know, the social stuff. And I also, you know, wouldn't have ended up here, you know? So it's a fun mind game to play. You know, I knew I was who I wanted to be then, but it's a very different person than who I am now.
And I think that looking back at my past too, all this stuff that I did led me to who I am today. So I'm glad you said that like that, because like, we wouldn't be who we are if it weren't, you know, for all of the great things that we've done and all the mistakes that we made, all the pain we've been through. You know, it all adds to the experience. And one thing that I've tried to do is enjoy the journey every day more, because the journey is, you know, it's that cliche of the journey is the destination. It's that's in songs and that's in popular culture for a reason. The journey is the destination. It is the point.
Right.
Because if you can't enjoy it day to day.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, because when you get to the destination, you're not going to know, because you'll be gone.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. Do we really want to catch that? Do we really want to catch what we're chasing, you know?
Right. So, the enjoying of every day. And for those folks who are still stuck and who are in the discomfort and in what I call the ick, sometimes it's tough to do that. Because everything feels so heavy, it feels so hard, it feels so challenging. And so I have always tried to look for the little things, not the big things. Because you can enjoy a little thing.
Yeah.
You know, whether
And that's where change starts. That's where you get out of the ick. That's where you get out of the darkness. That's where you get out of the stuck.
Right.
Is that small change.
Right.
You know, that journey of 1,000 miles, right? You got to take that first step. You got to move. And the universe is always in motion.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't really believe in absolutes, but I do believe the one universal absolute is change. Because the universe is, it does always move. Change is always going to happen. Mm-hmm. If we don't accept that and move with it, if we stay unmoving, and then we're in diametric opposition to like the will of the universe.
And things get harder.
Yeah, much harder.
The more you
harder
resist.
Harder than they need to be. Way harder than they need to be.
Yep. So tell me about healing from the kinds of experiences that you've had that most of us don't have. I'm sure that they are, except for your brothers and sisters in arms, but most of us civilians have no idea what life is truly like in war zones. But I think we can all understand trauma. We've all got our own traumas. But talk about healing and how you worked through that process.
Healing is this beautiful thing that is kind of easy to hear about. And then, you know, it's hard to do sometimes. I believe letting go is just starting, like we just talked about, is the first step. You have to start somewhere. If you have this giant task ahead of you, you know, you got to start. And then once you do that, I think letting go is this big thing. We have all these attachments to things. We have some good attachments to our loved ones and things like that, but we have all these attachments that aren't necessarily great for us. And we're attached to, we judge ourselves, we judge others. We don't forgive ourselves, we don't forgive others. We have these past events that have domain over us still. We're focused on a future that may never be. We worry about things that we don't have any control over. So why are we attached to all this stuff? How do we let go of it? And I think that is core to moving in a healing direction, is letting go. It has to happen.
Mm-hmm. I love the concept of attachment and detachment. I've talked before about one of the earlier spiritual guides that I took notice of and kind of followed is Mike Dooley, who his original sort of emergence into the popular culture was from the movie The Secret. And then he's written books and has done seminars, but he always sort of talks from the point of view of the universe, right? He as if the universe were talking to us. And his approach is, you know, to really, like you're saying, detach from the outcome. And the more qualifications you put on the things that you're wishing for or working towards or, you know, moving towards or trying to manifest, the more qualifications you put on it, the harder the universe has to work to make you happy. And yes. So he talks about moving towards a feeling, moving towards, you know, if you were to tell the universe, I want to be happy, I'm manifesting happiness, I'm in search of happiness, then the universe has infinite ways to make you happy. But if it's only, you know, a 1968 red convertible, you know, it's, geez, that's a tall order. But the other orders are much easier to deliver.
No, that's everything, really. That concept, that mindset and perspective is everything. I talk about being open to the universe all the time. Yeah, if you ask the universe for something, you have to be prepared to receive it. And it's that story of that guy that's on the roof and a guy in a canoe comes by when it's flooding and he won't get in the canoe and he won't get in the motorboat and he won't get in the helicopter and he drowns, right? And God's like, dude, I tried to help. I sent you all this stuff. And you were like, you said, you told me you were waiting for God, but I sent you all this stuff. And, you know, so yeah, we have to be open to the universe. We have to be in receive mode. We have to be prepared for, you know, those that you could call it, you know, thankful for unanswered prayers or unanswered meditations, because it's the other answer is going to be what you actually needed and wanted, even if you didn't know it.
Right.
So, you know, the secret or manifestation or law of attraction isn't about getting $1 million or Ferrari, right? It's about receiving what the universe sends you, and the universe will send you what you need. It will.
Right.
But you have to be open to it. And there's an aspect of meeting the universe halfway as well. Like you can't just kind of, again, you can't just sit not in motion and expect the universe to deliver that to you, even if you're open. So be open to the universe, move with it,
right?
Meet it halfway. Great things will happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And be, to your point, be open to it, not looking like you thought it would look. Be open to the guy in the canoe, the guy in the motorboat, and the guy in the helicopter.
That's right.
Because once you are, you can see all the ways that the universe is supporting you. Yeah. That brings me to another one of my favorites, which I know I've talked about before, and that is the movie Under the Tuscan Sun, which I would be surprised if you had seen, because it's a real chick flick. But in the middle of the movie, she's the main character says to somebody, you know, I want love in this house. I want a wedding in this house. I want something else. I want a family in this house. And at the end of the movie, she's hosting a wedding for a young friend and his new bride, and her best friend shows up and has a baby, and there's so much love in the yard. And the friend comes back to her and he says, you got everything you asked for. And you can see her in the movie, she kind of does the sort of reaction, and she goes and she scans the yard and it's like, holy cow, it's all there. I got everything I wanted. It just didn't look like what she thought it was going to look like. And I just always love that one. It's a favorite of mine.
That's a great story. I do like chick flicks.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I
yeah. Yeah. Well, check that one out. It's an oldie, but truly one of my favorites. It's one of the ones that Patrick knows that if it's on broadcast and we go cruising by, we're going to get stuck.
Stop and watch. Yeah.
That and Sweet Home Alabama. For some reason, I don't know why.
I have seen that.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
It is.
So where are you today, John?
Today, you know, I'm happy with myself. I mean, I'm joyful with myself. Most of the time, not all, and every second of every day, but for the most part. And I've started the spiritual community. I was finally able to launch it last fall. And that's what I'm doing in my life. That's, you know, I very much believe that people should live their higher purpose, figure out what it is, then live it and align it with their life. And I've done that. So I feel very fortunate to be able to have done that. And so I work with people from a community setting online where they can come together and we have meditation prompts and we have affirmations. We have places where people can just talk and or just watch and listen. And I also help people individually, one-on-one spiritual guidance and coaching as part of that community. And that's what I do now. That's my life.
Wonderful. Tell me, what's the name of your community and where can people find it?
The name is Kishar, and it's at kishar.org, K-I-S-H-A-R.org. And that's the entrance to our community, and it has links to all of our social media. And we also have a pretty cool YouTube channel that just gives free and open advice on how to better yourself and walk a spiritual path or live a better foundational life. And we're a nonprofit, so all of the funds that do go into the community go back to the community. So that's trying to give back to the world from that perspective as well.
Wonderful. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you sharing your journey with us.
Yeah, I appreciate the message that you're putting out in the world as well, that the transition and handling it, it's a great message for people.
Thanks so much for listening today. You know, something John said towards the beginning of our conversation stuck with me. He said, knowledge through experience becomes wisdom. Let me reorder the words and say it one more time. Wisdom is the knowledge we gain through experience. And in a lot of cases, the experience that John and I were talking about isn't really the easy breezy stuff. It's the going through the tough stuff that provides us with the experience that ripens into wisdom. So once we've seen a situation a couple of times and we've tried different ways of addressing or dealing with them, that experience calcifies into wisdom. We've experienced enough cause and effects and tried enough variables that we have a better understanding of how things are going to work when we step into a certain situation. For me, it wasn't necessarily realizing that I just picked terrible romantic partners or that some of the guys I dated were real jerks. I finally realized that the common denominator was me. And then I started to make changes in how I approached romantic attachments. And then finally found some success when I met my husband. When I look back, it's easy to see why things never worked out with the jerks. They were jerks, or they had demons they couldn't escape. But now I can also look back and see that there were some really lovely men I dated along the way that I actually really screwed things up with. I sabotaged relationships accidentally. Is it fair to say accidentally? I mean, I sure didn't mean to sabotage my own happiness or that of some of the lovely men I dated along the way. I just wasn't ready for all the things that came with a successful relationship when I was younger. Which interestingly brings me around to something else John said later in the conversation. He said, and I quote, "We wouldn't be who we are if it weren't for all the great things that we've done and all the mistakes that we've made. All the pain we've been through, it all adds to the experience." And ain't that the truth? If I hadn't taken all the detours I did, if I hadn't kissed all the frogs that I did, I would not have ended up with my prince. And that thought is simply unfathomable to me. I know I've said this before, but I really do consider my husband my reward for not settling, my reward for making my way through the swamp and over to somewhere where the ground was solid, somewhere that would support the building of a relationship. So I wonder if there are any experiences that you've had along the way that you beat yourself up for, things that you think of as mistakes, or experiences that you look back and think were a waste of your time, that you might be able to reframe as the accumulation of knowledge and experience. I know for me, it became easier to see how some of the pieces added up to experience once I was building a successful relationship with Patrick, because there was something concrete there that I could compare and contrast with. But there were signs along the way that I was making better choices even before I met Patrick. I remember one night being out on the town with some friends and running into an old boyfriend. And this was not one of the jerks, just someone whose baggage was incompatible with my own. We were hanging out at the bars, and at the end of the night, we felt like we wanted to keep hanging out. So he came home with me too. And we maybe were hanging out and talking and laughing till like 2 a.m. And part of my brain raised its hand and pointed out that in a previous era, I probably would have picked up on the subtle clues that I was getting from him about his openness to doing more than talking. And I probably would have hooked up with him simply for the fun of it. But I remember him, I remember letting those subtle cues just sort of float right by and not picking up on them, not addressing them. And then I remember him leaving my place that night and thinking to myself, look at you with your self-respect and feeling pretty darn good about myself. So, you know, there are clues along the way to your evolution if you're willing to see them. Another thing that John and I were saying was that change begins with the little things. So the clues might be subtle, but if you're trying to make changes in your life, they'll be there. You just have to let yourself see them. And then one other thing, and I just want to sort of hark back to last week when I was talking about the book Transitions by William Bridges and really thinking about transition as a three-stage process that starts with an ending, moves into a neutral zone, and then is a new beginning. And I said that I would probably be bringing this framework to more of my conversations this season. And as I reflect on my conversation with John, I think that that framework really fits for him because he said that he left the military and came home. And then there were several years where he and his wife were just kind of hanging out at home by themselves. They didn't quite fit in one world or in the civilian world, and they had left the military world behind. And so that ending for him was leaving the military and moving home. And then the neutral zone was this period of several years for him where he was readjusting and trying to find what this new thing was going to be, what his next phase was going to be. And then finally, he came about to creating this spiritual community, Kishar, that he and his wife co-founded and co-moderate. And so the framework of that transition piece really works for John's story. And so I just wanted to point that out because I had mentioned it last week and I had said I'd be bringing that lessons from that book and that framework through to some of these conversations. So just wanted to point out that this one really fits the model nicely. So, all right. Next week, you are going to meet Joe Scales, who, as he was approaching 40, couldn't figure out why he wasn't happier. He had a job that paid well, two great kids, and he'd been married for like 20 years. But the story isn't quite what you think it's going to be. So I hope you'll tune in next week and hear Joe tell us how he found himself again. I'll see you next week. The 40 Drinks Podcast is produced and presented by Savoir Faire Marketing Communications.